Tonight, we reach the 10th of the 10 most excellent practices for surviving the flood and getting to the other shore. And it's one of my favorite things to talk about. Imagine that you're watering your vegetables. You've got one of those sprayer hoses, and you're spraying your vegetables, and then you pull the hose or something and it kinks. What happens to the water?
It stops.
It stops, or at least it starts sputtering, diminishes, gets uneven. But then you notice, so you fix it, and then suddenly you've got this lovely flow of consistent, gentle rain falling on your vegetables. Or imagine that you're trying to move furniture from one side of a room to another, and it's carpet on the floor, it's heavy furniture, and you're pushing, and the more you push, it starts digging into the carpet, and you can't get it to move. And the more you push, the more it digs in, and maybe you're beginning to damage the furniture or the carpet. And then you suddenly remember, I've got furniture sliders. You know, those little discs that you put under the feet. So you put those on under the feet, and then you can push the thing across the room. I mean, it might be heavy, it might take some effort, but you can move it across the room. Or think of an engine that runs nicely. Maybe all of you aren't mechanics, but I had this lovely car in England, a little Skoda from Czechoslovakia. And after a while, it started having some serious engine trouble, so I rebuilt the engine. I bored out the cylinders, and I replaced all the gaskets, and just complete overhaul, and the thing ran so nice. It was like a sewing machine. It sounded good, and it felt good. And eventually, I sold it to this young man. And reminded him, this is an old Czechoslovakian car, you need to put oil in it, because it does burn oil. Keep the oil in it, it'll keep running like a dream. Well, he called me up a couple months later complaining, because the engine had seized, and the car wouldn't run. And it turns out that he had not ever checked the oil. He had ignored the temperature light, and eventually the thing just ground against itself and seized up, and the car was ruined. And that was sad, because I'd put a lot of work into that car. But the oil is what keeps the engine running. So the not having a kink in the hose is like equanimity. And having the sliders under the furniture is like equanimity. And having the oil in the engine is like equanimity, sort of. So, equanimity is one of my favorite things to talk about, but it is actually really hard to talk about. So those are some examples that I'll go back to, but none of them are really very good analogies when it comes down to it. Words that have been used to explain equanimity are always individually insufficient. Sometimes they can be confusing. Even if you pile them all together, you still don't really get a sense for what equanimity is. It's not a thing, right? It's not a thing that you can get. It's not a state that you can achieve. It's not really a thing that you do, although later on I'm going to talk about doing it. It's really more a lack of something. And it's a lack of a kink, It's a lack of a lack of friction on the carpet, a lack of friction, and a lack of excessive heat and grinding together. So it happens. You could say equanimity is the characteristic of when internal experiences arise and dance their dance, do whatever they need to do for as long as they need to, and then pass away without being interfered with. That's equanimity. They can live the natural life cycle. So some of the words that have been used to describe equanimity, I've used many of these myself, but I've got this long list. And all of these, I would say, are a good start. Acceptance, non-judgment, detachment, dispassion, allowing, composure, like self-composure, neutral attention, non-reactivity, mental balance, imperturbability. Those are, like I say, those are a good place to start, but none of those are really in themselves what equanimity is. In my mind, those are more like a consequence of equanimity. So when there's equanimity, then there's acceptance, right? When there's non-judgment in your experience, it's because there's equanimity. Non-reactivity happens when there's equanimity, but I've been saying that equanimity is not a thing, right? That it's, if it's a lack of a thing, if it's the absence of something, then I have to say that non-reactivity happens when reactivity is absent, which is sort of circular and doesn't really help, which is why it's hard to talk about. But it's the full unhindered flowing of experience. Is equanimity is the characteristic of that, of the flowing of it. It's like life unhindered. So, okay, how does this show up in our lives, in real day-to-day life? It's not actually that difficult to think of examples. You know, say, what would hinder the free manifestation life cycle and passing of a traumatic memory, for example? What would be something that would be like a kink in the hose that prevents that from flowing?
Trying to not feel it.
Trying to not feel it, yeah. Like suppressing it. Mm-hmm. What about, what would hinder a positive, pleasant experience from being able to come and be pleasant and pass in its own time? Grasping onto it, not wanting to let it go. Any other examples you can think of?
How life should be different than it is.
Thinking that life should be different than it is.
Feeling we're not worthy.
Feeling we're not worthy. So that's hindering feelings of worth. And probably a whole lot of our own expression. So, yeah. Shame and embarrassment, you know, we identify with it. We think, I'm embarrassed, or I'm not worthy, because we're identifying with it. But it's actually possible to experience shame without interfering with it, to allow it to arise and be unpleasant and pass, because of our habitual identification with it, that hinders it and that makes it sort of stick and it's not able to fully blossom and pass. And so then we have to deal with it later. So equanimity is when we're not doing those things. So if we refrain from interfering, to go back to some of the words I read, that would be non-interference, right? Or allowing. And we might not interfere with something because we have no aversion to it or no longing, grasping onto it. And in that case, you could describe it as non-judgmental, right? Or neutral observation. If we're not identified with something, we're less likely to have aversion or clinging. So then you could say that we're having detachment or dispassion. So all of these words are relevant to equanimity, but none of them fully explain it. You could look at it as an activity. You know, if you're choosing not to interfere with an unpleasant situation that would be like putting oil in your psycho-spiritual engine. If you choose as much as you're able to let go of something you're hanging on to, that's like unkinking the hose. If you choose to experience an unpleasant situation without fighting with it, that would be like putting the sliders under the furniture. But it's not, again, it's not a thing. It's not something that we can put in, or it's not something that we can achieve, that we use. It's not a thing. It's just the unimpeded flow when there is no interference. Okay, that actually sounds sort of like it makes sense, right? But how do we foster this or cultivate it? It's easy enough for me to say, just let go, don't resist, but you know that it doesn't work that way. So there are a couple of ways that we can actually cultivate this non-interference, even if we don't totally understand what we're talking about. And they are the same two ways that we have always come down to with all of the other 10 most excellent, 9 most excellent practices, which is coming at it from both sides. This action that we can take to intentionally try to be equanimous, regardless of whether or not we actually are. And then there's spontaneous equanimity that we learn to observe and notice and acknowledge when it happens, which will cause it to happen more. These two ways would be the activity of acting equanimous is creating what I'll call surface equanimity. And I'm calling it surface equanimity because it relates to what we are consciously aware of, not because it's shallow equanimity, but because it's on the surface of our awareness. And we do that by choosing to not interfere as much as we're able to do it. So as soon as you become aware of some way in which you're interfering, you're angry or you're resisting or you're hoping a little bit too much or whatever, whenever you notice that, you make an intentional decision to stop doing that. Now, chances are you're not going to be able to stop entirely, but as much as you're able, you stop interfering. And then you have to not interfere with your inability to stop interfering. Because if you start getting frustrated with the fact that you can't let go, or you thought you'd let go but you hadn't actually, and then that makes you frustrated or angry or impatient or you think it's not working, you're just putting another kink in the hose somewhere else. So you intentionally try as much as you're able to stop interfering, and you do it gently and kindly to yourself, and you try as much as you can not to judge what you might see as success, because success is not relevant here. What's relevant is intention. So that's how, that's a creating surface equanimity. That's how you would take action to act equanimous. Now, what's spontaneous equanimity? That's, say you're pushing that piece of furniture without the sliders, right? And it's getting caught in the carpet. And you're pushing and pushing and pushing, and then suddenly something gives, and the thing just flies forward. Like, probably had some experience like that. So it wasn't because of anything you did or any intention you had, but this free-flowing just happened spontaneously. And perhaps you've experienced this in a more personal way. Maybe you've had physical pain that you haven't been able to reduce with whatever methods you're working on, and you're getting frustrated and you're fearful, and then suddenly you realize that actually this is okay. Not that you've made a decision that it's okay. You just notice that for some reason, right now, it's not a big deal. And that might last for a long time, or it might last just for a brief moment. But you notice it and you think, oh, wow, that was nice. I wish I could do that. That's spontaneous equanimity. And when that happens, then you notice it. Has anyone experienced anything like that? Or maybe with an emotional situation? Yeah, so it's like nothing to do with you. Just suddenly everything's okay. So that's spontaneous equanimity. Why does it show up like that when you least expect it? Well, you know, all those times when you're trying to meditate and you're sleepy, like I notice we all are tonight, or you can't concentrate or you're bored and, you know, you're doing your 20 minutes on the cushion, but you think nothing is happening. And I always say, no, something's happening deep down inside. Well, now you understand what's happening. What's happening is that your deeper circuits, your consciousness below your awareness of it is working out kinks. And you can't see it because it's below the level of your awareness. This is what's called deep equanimity as opposed to surface. And so this is happening. You think you're just wasting your time being bored, but actually things are being worked out. And then at some point, something close enough to the surface gets unkinked. And there's this spurt of flowing, and you can see it. And it didn't actually come from nowhere. It came from possibly hours or years of you sitting there being bored. You just can't see it until it gets up to the surface. So the most important thing to do when you notice this is to acknowledge it and enjoy it. Just take a moment to say, oh, yeah, this feels good. This is spontaneous equanimity. And when you acknowledge it like that and don't just pass over it, that message seeps down inside into your inner workings of your psyche. And the message is passed on that this is actually a good thing to do. And so the kinks keep on getting worked on. Your deep circuits want more of that, so they keep on working out the little kinks. So that's deep equanimity. It's actually, because it's below our awareness level, deep equanimity is the nervous system itself not interfering with itself. So notice and appreciate when that happens. So we've got consciously choosing to be equanimous and noticing spontaneous equanimity. Let me speak briefly about some specific techniques for things that we can do to cultivate equanimity. And this will be my recommended homework if you want to try it, to try some of these techniques. The first thing it's actually pretty easy to do and pretty easy to understand is intentionally creating equanimity in your physical body. All right, so we're just going to be working with muscles, and over time that will seep into your mind, and you'll be creating equanimity in your mind as well. But you start with your body, and so what you do is you settle into your posture. Be comfortable, because we're working with relaxation. And notice how your body feels. You can do this in whatever technique you like. You can do a body scan. You can do free-floating awareness. Just let your attention go to different parts of your body. You can feel your whole body as a whole unit. Whatever works for you. But you want to feel the sensations of your body. Now, it may occur when you do this that everywhere that you place your attention is relaxed. You have no tension anywhere, and you feel just totally at ease, at least as far as you're aware, which is all we're ever asked to do. If this is the case, then that's really nice. You want to pay attention to that and enjoy the relaxation. because paying attention and appreciating it is going to train your body to want to do more of it. So if you have no tension anywhere, then put some effortless effort into enjoying the relaxation. Now, if you do find tension, any sort of tension in your body, it could be that you're pressing your tongue against your teeth, or that you've got tension in your neck and shoulders, or anything like that. Anywhere that you find tension, you try, if you can, to intentionally release that tension. And if you can, then you notice that you've done that, you notice how good it feels, and you appreciate that for a moment. And then you go to the next area where you notice tension, and you release that. If you're not able to release the tension intentionally, which is not uncommon, then you notice that there's tension and you acknowledge it and you welcome it. You make the tension as welcome in your body as the relaxation is. So there's tension, try and relax it, can't relax it. Okay, hi tension, you're welcome here. Go on to the next one. Try and relax it. If you can, enjoy the relaxation for a moment and go on to the next one. If you can't, welcome the tension, go on to the next one. It may be that you're able to relax some muscles and it feels good. And as soon as you go on to the next place that is tense, the first place gets tense again. That's totally normal and totally okay. You just keep on going through the body, one after another. Don't worry what's happening where you're not paying attention. You just enjoy any relaxation and welcome any place that you are not able to relax. And in this way, you're creating physical equanimity in your body. Which is actually quite pleasant, and if you can't sleep, that's something that I like to do. Now, it may be that doing this will lead you sort of naturally into a second technique, which is creating equanimity in your mind. If you are becoming more and more relaxed, you might find that other sensations start to arise that you hadn't noticed before because the tension was covering them or distracting you from them. So it's like you relaxed, you get a little bit of the kink out, and now you can notice other things. Now, whether or not those other things are pleasant or unpleasant, doesn't matter. You notice them and you welcome them. And you don't judge them, you don't try and change them. And that's where the equanimity in your mind is coming from. So the equanimity in your body is physical relaxation. Equanimity in your mind is allowing whatever is there to arise. And if you're not getting more and more relaxed, if you're just totally tense the whole time, you can also build equanimity in your mind by not judging that tension and by welcoming the tension. So this is just two real simple ways that you can work on this from the top conscious end, and it builds up over time. And again, you know, you might feel like I can't relax, I'm not creating any equanimity. Well, your intention is there, and you also have the opportunity to work in your mind, and just over and over and over and over, it starts to build up and your whole baseline of equanimity rises. And at the same time, that stuff is working underneath and more is going to be arising spontaneously. You can also create equanimity in your mind at any time when you're not formally meditating. Just teach yourself to be aware of your reactions to things. If you're having a conversation or you're stuck in traffic or whatever, whenever you notice something that you're doing that's inhibiting the flow of the experience, you're resisting or you're clinging or you're signing off and ignoring, just make an attempt intentionally to stop doing that. And again, it's the intention that is powerful here. Even if you can't stop being frustrated in traffic, the fact that you acknowledge that you're frustrated in traffic and notice it is a powerful thing. And it's a lifelong process. So again, the more you do, even if it's just tiny little bits, it builds up. And you'll start seeing, it'll become more obvious to you that your equanimity on the surface that you have some control over is getting stronger. And sooner or later, you'll start seeing more of it bubbling up. So that's sort of what I have to say about equanimity. I've found in my practice that it's been like the key thing. It seems to me like any kind of meditation you do will result in equanimity. And maybe that's why it's the 10th of the 10 most excellent practices. I don't know. I don't know the scholarly thoughts on why they're in the order that they are. I do know, and don't forget, that they don't work in chronological order, right? So you don't have to wait until you've mastered generosity before you move on to, what's the second one? Okay, I'm editing that out. So you don't have to master one before you go on to the other. They all work together, and they all build on each other. And it's a complicated journey. We've just spent almost a year looking in detail and only scratched the surface of these practices. So there's a lot in them. At the same time, it's really simple. And it seems like every month I've come to the end, I've had the same conclusion. Every practice is just pay attention and be kind. So I guess we could stop there. Unless maybe I should go into the etymology of the words that are translated as kindness and attention. No? Okay, that was a joke. I feel like I should say something profound because we've come to the end of the series, but there we are. Start back at the beginning. Only there is no beginning. Be present and be kind. Oh, I probably didn't record it.